Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Black Friday edition of the Talking About podcast. I am Sean Kennedy. Joining me this week is Dave Early of Liberty Ballers. Dave, thanks for coming back on the podcast. How was your Thanksgiving holiday?
Always fun, Sean. Happy holiday season. My holiday was awesome. I had a lot to be grateful for. I had a lot of fun with family, keeping an eye on some football games, and peeling some potatoes and carrots.
Good way to chip in. A good football Thursday for Eagles fans. We got the Cowboys loss, and that's always a festive way to start the holiday season, seeing Dallas lose.
There's a little window for the Eagles here.
They gotta keep it up and keep running the ball, I guess, is the key, it seems like. But we're here to talk hoops. The Sixers finished up a 6-game road trip just the other day. They went 2-4 on the road trip, which I do believe when we discussed it, I pegged that exactly as
nice. I think you did. Yeah.
Yeah. A little pat on the back for me. we'll get into more specifics about what happened, but it just kind of broadly, what were your takeaways from the road trip?
It's still maxi season. And I mean, that's easily the best positive of the season so far. At any one of these games, if he had sort of hit some sophomore slump, it wouldn't have been surprising. Now it'll almost be surprising if he does, because he's been so consistent that it's awesome.
Yeah, he was really carrying a heavy load, in, like, especially offensively in these games. Like, without Joel, who is expected to return Saturday, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but Tyrese just like an offensive fulcrum for this team. And I don't think we ever expected that coming into the season. I think we thought, oh, he could be like a microwave scorer type. He might be able to, you know, be the focal point of a second unit kind of thing. Like if kind of like what Shake Milton was doing last year, where just, we don't have a lot going for us in the second unit, so just give him the ball and see if he can create some stuff. But he's doing it as a starter against opposing starting units, and like just routinely putting up like 20 a game, and it looks kind of effortless. His true shooting percentage is through the roof. He's had multiple games without turning the ball over at all, which is crazy for a guy that does have the ball in his hands as much as he does. I mean, there is like, I took a look at it, and I don't think it's quite realistic, but there's like serious, is Tyrese Maxey an all-star this season talk in NBA circles?
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. I mean, we were like joking about it at Liberty Ballers. Like, it's so unfair what we were hoping he is because of the Ben Simmons situation. And given the ridiculous, like, you have the baggage of our Markelle Fultz draft pick on you. You have the Ben Simmons situation on you. And we're turning to you now, like, yearning for this. Not really, truly, realistically expecting it, but here it is. And it's crazy. The guy that you always wanted who could dribble and shoot, what you hoped Markelle Fultz could be, this is how he's playing right now.
Yeah, I was going to mention, like, the Fultz thing. He just has this ton of baggage on him, like, from the fan base, emotional baggage that, yeah, it was Fultz.
Predates his career.
It was Simmons, yeah. Tyrese Maxey was maybe a freshman in high school when all this baggage started. And he has not only met expectations that we might have had coming into the year, like, he had a good summer league, so we're thinking, oh, well, he could fill in as a starter for a little bit, like kind of hold the fort down until maybe a bench trade happens and then get a more veteran player in. But he could be a really helpful kind of spark plug guy. But the fact that we're, and not only Philadelphians, but like NBA analysts are looking at it, like, is there a case for a Tyrese Maxey all-star? And I don't think it's going to happen. I think there's too many people that have track records in the East that are going to like get their like, hey, you're still having a good season. You're going to get the nod just because you deserve it based on your career track record.
There'll be some lifetime achievement awards. And yeah. By the time it's in, the Sixers record may not be as good as an all-star would need it to be.
Yep. That's another good point that to get more than one all-star. And I'm assuming that if Embiid is back and the illness doesn't have long-term lingering effects and he doesn't have another injury, like he's the Sixers all-star, like to have more than one, you have to be like a top four team usually. Unless you just have two like apex superstars that are just carrying the team and you don't have anything else around them. But yeah, it would seem like it would be Embiid. And if they were going to get a second all-star, they have to have a top four record in the East, which I'll mention right now, they are 10-9 and tied for eighth place in the East. So while it was nice that they were competitive in most of those games on the road trip, and it was nice to see them get the two wins, a 2-4 record has set them back a little bit. They're now like very firmly in the central morass of the Eastern Conference, where they were a few weeks ago, they were at the top. So this has played a role in dropping them down. The fact that they've dealt with injuries and half, like a third of the team had COVID, and we're very fortunate that Tobias and Matisse and Isaiah Joe have all come back from being on the protocol list, and they haven't looked any worse for wear. Not even as far as Seth did last year, where he didn't look like himself. The guys that have come back have been themselves.
They have. They've looked really good, and it's a blessing in many ways. Another thing to be grateful for that they're already back out there and playing and looking pretty good. You feel for Joel because it sounds like he got a pretty bad case, a breakthrough case. And you know, it's easy to feel like this isn't fair and to hope that he's okay and hope that it hasn't impacted his family too much. Can't wait to see him back out there. The schedule is really hard. Even if he were to come back and not need some ramp up time, Keith Pompey mentioned that he is still dealing with the sore knee, which is kind of worrisome because at one point, Ramona Shelburne's indicated that yes, he banged it in game one of the season with Valanciunas, but it is a meniscus injury. And that is what he had a slight tear in from last season. So if he comes back and we're still seeing him pop up on that injury report with the knee, it's going to be a little worrisome that, you know, is this going to be something that's just here throughout the season? Is there ever going to be a point where we start to think he's going to need surgery on this next offseason? We're starting to watch that. So there are some, you know, things to keep an eye on when he does return. Also, the schedule is brutal at Boston, at Atlanta, at Charlotte, Utah, Golden State. So I'm not expecting him to look 100% when he first returns. I don't think many people are. There's some scenarios where they can end up, you know, maybe four games below 500.
Yeah, it is a tough part of the schedule for them. Even though they are returning home, they have the Wolves first. And normally you would think, oh, the Wolves, well, that's an easy one. But they've actually won five straight, and they're playing really good basketball right now. Towns is having a very good season. And then Anthony Edwards looks like the real deal. He's just been crushing it.
Flying over people.
Yeah. Did you, what were your thoughts on the dunk he had where they called a charge? Did you see that play the other day?
Yes, I saw it. He pushed the guy's head down like you could in video games.
Yeah.
And he kind of like, he kind of dunked it. He threw it and touched the rim. So I'm not sure.
It was like the old Blake Griffin dunk.
Yeah.
From years back.
Dwight Powers did one.
Yeah,
exactly. I have often had a pet peeve that they don't call those, and so many of the greatest dunks that Michael Jordan has done, he didn't need to push off. And then you see, like, you know, fast forward 10 15 20 years, and that dunk that Sabonis did on Embiid, where he clearly just removed the blocking arm to get a dunk. So I did want to see them eventually crack down on push offs on dunks at the rim. It was hard to watch on that one because it was such a Vince Carter style hurdle.
Yeah, it was a little like the dunk contest dunks where the guys bring out like their 6'5" teammate to dunk over, and then they get a little launching pad off the shoulder.
Yes,
while on their way up. Yeah, it was a little bit like that. It obviously looked amazing in person. And if they hadn't called it, I would have been perfectly fine with it because, hey, you did something really cool. Like, we want to encourage you to do really cool things on the basketball court.
There was the best play of the night for anyone in that stadium, and it didn't even count, right? So
yeah, they'll always remember that one. They won't remember that the Wolves won that game or that it was actually – well, they might remember that it was a charge because that'll just be part of the story when they're telling it. But
yeah
that was the memorable moment. But yeah, so the Sixers are going to have to deal with Ant Edwards trying to dunk over Seth Curry or someone else. And Towns playing really well. So this will be, if Embiid is indeed back, another chapter in the Embiid cat saga. And I'm sure you recall Embiid's social media post where he was raising the cat back when Embiid was in full troll mode.
Yes.
So yes. Yeah, we'll see if we have another chapter in that. Hopefully Embiid, as you mentioned, like it's disappointing that he isn't fully healthy in other areas. You would have hoped that could have been a silver lining from him having this 10 to 14 day layoff from COVID, that it could have been a nice little mini break for his joints and everything else. But yeah, just the fact that the knee isn't 100% is fairly concerning. Just game one, and he is reportedly when he suffered this injury. And like, when are we going to have a healthy Joel Embiid season? Sadly, the answer may be never. But I was hoping game one would not have been the health turning point for Joel this season. But yeah, maybe he'll play through it. You'd have to worry about a guy his size who wasn't able to train while he was out. Not only because of an injury, but because he wasn't allowed to be around other people. So I'm sure his conditioning can't be like where he would want it to be. So yeah, like not going to be a full complement of minutes, I would imagine. And against Karl Anthony Towns, who is playing very well right now, that's going to be difficult for the Sixers.
Yeah. This is turning into a very gloomy Black Friday pod.
All our hot takes and doom and gloom are 70% off. So that's the good news.
Order now for your Liberty Ballers attire. Yes. I think that a lot of the teams that you were keeping an eye on hoping for disaster are looking pretty good. Like, you might have been watching the Bulls as Zach LaVine decides about his long-term future. He's headed for unrestricted free agency. Bradley Beal and the Wizards. Towns is another one that the Sixers may not have had their eyes on, but they've had the most consistent interest in Ben Simmons. So they represented a really good third team fit. And if somehow Towns said, I want out of here, that makes it even easier because you could see a lot of teams wanting him, obviously. So things not going completely the Sixers' way.
Or if they just weren't playing well, they may just think like, hey, we need a big shakeup.
Right.
They
suddenly and for a while they didn't. Like, I think Jonathan Sharks of the Ringer had a pod where he was like, Ty Lue ran a scheme on the T-Wolves and they haven't won a game since. Now everyone's doing it. And then they went the other way. So maybe they figured it out.
They figured out Ty Lue's scheme. Way to go. Maybe people were beating the Timberwolves because generally speaking, you should beat the Timberwolves, but now their young talent is kind of clicking. And yeah, good for them that they're winning some games.
Stacking top five picks works.
Eventually, you would think it has to, as long as you draft guys who can shoot, which is hit or miss for some teams. But after the T-Wolves, you're right. They do have the Magic on Monday at home, so you would like to think that's a win. But yeah, then back on the road, they have Boston, Atlanta, and then a couple games against the Hornets, who have been playing extremely well this season for a young squad that seems to be clicking together. They're 12-8 right now. And then Jazz, back Warriors. Back
with the Jazz. That's tough.
Yeah, Jazz, Warriors, Grizzlies, Heat, Brooklyn. Like, that's a really tough 2 weeks of December to get started.
What's the vibes going to be like with the fans? Are they going to be saying, Joel Embiid's prime, you need to trade for Buddy Hield?
I don't know. I think if Joel's back and playing like himself and Tyrese Maxey is continuing to do what he has been doing, I feel like the vibes will be fine. They may not be winning every game, but as long as they're, you know, still a game or two above 500, and you have this guy playing maybe not MVP level like he was last season, but, you know, all-star level, and you have this rising star that you can kind of point to the future regarding in Tyrese. With all the other young guys that have been playing well, I feel like that's enough for the vibes department.
Tyrese Maxey might be able to carry us in vibes.
Carries us in a lot of other ways.
Yeah. Sean Hyken, Bleacher Report, just did his 24 players under 24 years old ranking. And, I mean, he had Maxey crazy high. He had him over SGA. He had him over Jaren Jackson, Trey Young, Kevin Herter, Tyrese Halliburton, Ayton, Garland. I mean, so he had him like sky high, and he might not make an all-star this season, but some people are projecting him to be like a star in this league moving forward.
To be fair, that list was really ridiculous. he had like Tyler Hero above Jason Tatum, just like truly absurd rankings in some instances. I'm glad people outside Philadelphia are also like on the Maxey train, and it's definitely good that he's getting a lot of shine and people are thinking highly of him. But just looking through that list, like SGA was way too low. Like there were some really, really questionable picks. So
correct.
I don't feel like that should be the Tyrese Maxey has made it banner we hang based on his ranking there, but it is good that people are loving how well he's been playing and giving him the rightful accolades that he deserves.
Finishing has been fun, and the road broadcasts have been enjoying. I listen to them to see what they think of him, and they're like, this guy is fast, man. You got to get in front of him.
Yeah, his game is one that really just jumps off the screen at you, because he is one of the fastest guys in the league. He does it with the ball in his hands. So it's not a guy where if you're like a lot of, I don't want to say casuals, but you know, just people that don't watch, they don't grind film. They typically are only watching the ball. So Maxey's work is done with the ball in his hands. He's not like a Seth Curry where you can appreciate like, oh wow, he just ran around three different screens or whatever. Or like old school Ray Allen or JJ Redick that were doing a lot of off ball stuff that, you know, yeah, you appreciated when the threes went in, but you didn't maybe really appreciate all the work that went in before he actually received a pass. Maxey is a guy that he's doing it with the ball in his hands. He's incredibly quick, which is just something that anyone can appreciate. It's just something you can visibly see very easily. And he makes it in a lot of, he makes a lot of difficult shots look really easy. Like he has the floater, which is a very advanced play, and just looks pretty when it works. Cause it's like, oh, there's this beautiful teardrop that dropped from the heavens and fell through perfectly. He does the scoop shots and, you know, kind of contorts his body for weird angles while he's running it near full speed towards the rim. Like all those things, they really just pop off the screen. And it's an easy game to kind of see and appreciate, because what he's doing is it's very visible, like what he's doing with the ball in his hands.
Yeah. He's really gotten those, you know, shooting with his right hand, no gather, jumping off his right foot. So you often see a shot blocker crouch down, ready to spring up, but then he's released it before the timing. So he's really throwing off the timing of these shot blockers with all of the different types of finishes that he's, I wouldn't say mastered yet, but, you know, comfortable using. And so, yeah, it's taken us to a level, taken them to a level that probably wouldn't have expected at this point. Even our shout out, Harrison Grimm, who liked Malcolm Brogdon in a potential Ben Simmons deal, he's now like, you know what? I get it. Maxey's that good. We could look for wings now too. So we have more options in potential Ben Simmons trades. So that's how you know Maxey is balling, when we're Sixers fans are like, maybe we don't need a guard anymore.
Yeah, that's something I've consistently asked guests and folks at the site, is has Maxey's play changed your opinion of what a Ben Simmons return should be focused on? And as I've maintained, like, obviously you take the best deal, whatever it is. If you finally get what you think is 80 cents on the dollar and it happens to be a guard, then you do it and you make it work. But yeah, you can maybe think like, oh, well, I have two competing offers of, you know, I guess fairly similar baseline value. One's a guard, which previously we would have said, oh, we absolutely need a guard. Like, that has to be our focus. And one's a wing. Like, maybe you can just go with the wing now. And, you know, and that is fine. Whereas before, that seemed like such a black hole when we came into the season. It was like, oh, we have Maxey, who people don't think is maybe really a point guard, and we think has a bright future, but maybe it's as more of a combo guard, microwave scorer, and he's definitely not ready to be the PG1 on a contender. And then behind him, you have Shake Milton, who a lot of the same concerns about, like, combo guard status and what, and that might be putting too much on him to be the backup point guard for a team. But yeah, now that kind of, at least that one area of the team, there's a lot less trepidation than there was coming into the season.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, aside from the pie in the sky offers like Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine, and Damian Lillard, a lot of us were wondering who's like the worst guy if we had to make a trade right now. I think I put De'Aaron Fox before the season started, or even earlier in the summer. But now I would switch that and be like, you know, he's doing a heck of a De'Aaron Fox impersonation.
Kind of what people thought De'Aaron Fox should be more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, just really been playing well and doing it, scoring efficiently and taking care of the basketball. Just aside from making like next level playmaking reads to his teammates, like, that's not there yet. He's definitely not a true point guard in the sense that he can make those advanced reads off the dribble and set up his teammates. But everything else has been exactly what you would hope it would be.
Yeah, I think Jackson Frank had a tweet after one of the last games. He was like, him being able to make these pocket passes, and he has had some pick and roll plays where he's thrown the bounce pass with one hand to a cutter or to a roll man for a dime. He's done it in transition a few times. And it definitely, you know, I don't want to get carried away, but he definitely reminds me of Tony Parker and Steve Nash and Rajon Rondo when he makes some of these plays.
Which is definitely high praise. And you're right. I was saying he doesn't have that yet, but he has shown flashes, and flashes. There have been signs that he could have it in the future, which is all very encouraging. And he definitely has worked hard to develop his game in that area. So he should get the proper accolades. And I don't mean to not heap the necessary praise on him for that. I'm just, the reality is he's still not there yet in that one area of his game, but, you know,
it's like Aaron Rodgers. He's got, you know, he throws a lot of touchdowns and very, very few picks. And you mentioned he's doing that with the turnovers. His turnovers are extremely low. If he was going to develop as a playmaker role, you'd expect him to take some more risks, throw some more turnovers, and develop that side of his game. But there would be some growing pains there for sure.
Yep. All right. So we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, so we're back. Dave, you mentioned a little earlier that there were some other teams that had kind of exceeded expectations, and kind of, you might be a little worried as a Sixers fan now that they're down at eighth place in the East. given, which is, you know, perfectly reasonable given the injuries and COVID concerns they've had. So no one's saying that they're disappointed by the team's performance, you know, with all those things in mind. But I just wanted to ask you, as far as the other teams go, who has most surprised or impressed you through this first, you know, quarter of the season?
In the East specifically?
Yeah, in the East.
I would like no one really. I think most teams that I would have considered the Sixers' top threats in the East have looked worse than I would have guessed. I mean, obviously, I didn't expect the Kyrie Irving ineligible to play all season thing. I might have expected the Brooklyn Nets to struggle a little bit more than they have. They do look darn good. They're 14-5 in first place. But when I watch them, I don't think this team is unbeatable by any stretch because James Harden hasn't looked like James Harden yet. I mean, he has hit some games where he does, but he's definitely a step slower than where he was before the original hamstring last March. The Heat look really, really good. And, you know, we joke about Tyler Hero, but man, he's like outplaying Damian Lillard, or he's like on that similar shooting pace so far this year. So the emergence of him on top of the stars that we know they have makes them, you know, one of the top threats in the East for sure. Really well-rounded team, and all of their annoying Heat culture narratives come with them. They play hard.
Yeah. Now, Hero's been great. And, you know, I said that earlier, like, oh, you have Hero above Tatum. Not to say that Hero hasn't been playing really well and that people should be high on his future, but Hero does not have a block this season, I think. Like, it's there's just, he doesn't do much besides scoring the basketball for you. Like, he doesn't get, like, in comparison to Jason Tatum is a very good defender. He's got size, so you can match him across multiple positions. He gives you a lot in the rebounding department. He does a lot of playmaking for you. And then maybe Hero's scoring slightly better than Tatum is this season. I don't have the numbers in front of me as far as efficiency and everything else, but yeah, like, it's obvious that Tatum does a lot more for a basketball team than Tyler Hero does. It's like, Hero's at this point in his career, at least, is kind of one note, and he's scoring the basketball and doing a great job of it, and he's having a great season. He deserves credit for that. But that just looking at those two players specifically was one that jumped out at me at the list. But yeah, you're right. Hero is playing really well, and that's been a big part of the Heat, you know, getting off to this great 12-7 start this season.
Yeah, and on a team with Jimmy Butler, Bam, Lowry, and some well-rounded other pieces, they don't need him to be Jason Tatum to be lethal. If he's playing like CJ McCollum or even on that level, that's a huge addition for them that we might not have expected because he just wasn't that good last year. He was really, really good in the bubble and he had a down year. I don't know if it was a slump or what. I saw some rumors that he was in a relationship that wasn't smooth or something. So who knows, but he's a young guy. There's going to be some inconsistencies, but he's shooting really well. So that has the Heat looking a little bit better than I would have said before I expected to see him look so good. I didn't even take him in our top 100 Liberty Ballers draft. I took like Caruso and Melton over him, and I'm kicking myself for that because I took him last year.
Caruso was a good pick. Caruso's been playing very well. His defensive work has been a big reason for Chicago's success. And
yeah,
you know,
Chicago is the team where you're like, wow, I didn't expect him to be so good so early. And Caruso's part of that for sure.
Yeah, he is. And DeRozan, JJ Redick on a recent media appearance said like DeRozan has to be in the top five MVP conversation. So not that saying he should be in the MVP conversation, but when you're making your list of top five, like, is DeRozan fifth on the MVP ballots? He said that has to be like a legitimate conversation, which I don't really disagree with. Like, DeRozan's been incredibly efficient, and he's been, him and LaVine both have been carrying the offensive load. Vucevic has been out due to COVID and he just returned, but he wasn't playing at his all-star level even prior to that. So it's really been the two wings that have been, you know, kind of doing the bulk of the scoring and playmaking for Chicago, and they're playing really well. And if you have a guy that's playing as well as DeRozan has for a team that is tied for second in a conference, like, yeah, you probably should maybe consider him like up in that MVP. Not to say he should be talked about as could he win MVP, but should he be, is he the seventh person on the MVP odd, and you have to like ask if he's fifth? Like, I think that that's fair enough point to make.
Yeah, if the season were to end today, he would be very high on that list, and it would be like, wow. It does appear that they've got like 1.5 franchise players between between LaVine and DeRozan. And that's what you need to win a playoff series. You need at least one of those guys, and they've got maybe two on some given nights. I know LaVine's thumb hasn't been quite right.
Yeah, and that's going to be an issue all year. So that's definitely because it seems like he's going to play through it, and it would have to be surgery if he wanted to get it 100%. So, yeah, I had Jason Pat of Bloggable on, and he said, yeah, like the plan seems to be like he's just going to deal with it all year, and fingers crossed.
Yeah, good pun. so I'm not completely sold on the Bulls for whatever reason. They could be better than the Sixers, and they could beat the Sixers in the first round of playoffs. So I'm not overlooking them. But in terms of the top threats in the East, they're not in my top four at this point. Like, I still believe in the Hawks, who are just 10-9 in ninth place.
But they've won six straight, so maybe they're finally figuring some stuff out after a really bad start to the season.
Yeah, they might have, like, they need to get back to the level they were at, and the level they were at did not include guys like DeAndre Hunter, who was hurt, Cam Reddish, who wasn't a huge part of the game plan, and Okongwu was, but he was still way behind Capella in terms of minutes. But they've got so many guys that are like 24 or less that you got to look at them and say, could this team just be like, could they just like blitz people, or could they consolidate two or three of those with Danilo and bring someone really good? And then you have to worry about them even more. So definitely look at the Hawks as a top threat in the East, despite their record.
Yeah, that was when I had Glenn Willis on the pod, who covers the Hawks. That was kind of the big question in Hawks land is, do you continue to stay the course with, hey, we've got these young guys, the vibes are all good, they're gelling, they're growing together, or do you make the consolidation trade? And you have a couple salaries that like Gallinari that can be useful for, you know, getting a big star back who has a big contract, and they obviously have all the young pieces. They have their own picks still available. So you can put forth a pretty competitive package as far as being a trade partner for somebody, for a disgruntled star or a team just looking to pivot in a different direction. So everyone there is kind of on the fence. And
If I was dude with sign, I would say, let's start using disgruntled when we don't mean basketball stars who want to trade. Like, we got to start using this word in a few other instances, because that's the only time I ever hear it.
It's only when basketball guys aren't happy with the team they're on.
Only time I hear the word disgruntled. Have you ever said it like normal in life?
I think I have, but okay. I kind of use weird words because I just like language.
So. You're a writer, so
yeah.
Makes sense.
I don't think I'm the typical person as far as what words get thrown out there.
I agree with you, and I think they would benefit more from that consolidation trade. Like, I mean, if they could get Bradley Beal or something, that would make them favorites to win the East potentially. So, in the offseason, so I think they would love to do that. If not, though, you have two ways it could go. You could end up looking like a light version of the Warriors who had all that talent and it worked out, or you could look like the Celtics and now you just have all these guys who once used to represent the biggest war chest trade package possible. Now it's just, you know, Romeo Langford and a few other names, a couple Williams.
Yeah. You don't want to pass up on that final star because you won't trade Terry Rozier. That's not the path you want to go down.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, Travis Schlenk going to the front office in Atlanta, that there was always kind of the Golden State model. And that's why they took Trae Young instead of Luka, because he said elite, like just that elite top shooting was the roster build they wanted to have. So yeah, we'll see if it pays off. They're certainly an interesting team and they've had playoff success, as Sixers fans know all too well. And cool. Yeah, as I said, they've won six in a row, so they are charging back up the standings after a really rough start.
Yeah, they got the best home record in the East, which is normally something the Sixers have.
Yeah, tough start to the home season for the Sixers this year. They're only 4-4, which is definitely unusual, but there have been extenuating circumstances to be sure, with, you know, Joel missing this extended time, and
the 16-1 run by the Nets hurt.
Yeah, that was
this Aldridge game.
Yeah, that was a game that definitely slipped through their fingers. You mentioned how the Nets haven't looked quite how they might have hoped. I just want to give a nod to Kevin Durant, who is coming off like an Achilles injury and looks better than he did before the injury. Is that fair to say? Or
I don't know if it's fair to say, but that it's even a conversation is insane.
Because that used to be like a career ender, and he looks like the best player on the planet again. And if he's not playing better than he was previously, it's probably just more a natural thing, like his age, and he's maybe not expending as much energy defensively as he used to, just because at a certain point in your career, you can't really do that. You kind of keep it in reserve for at least the postseason. That's what LeBron, like late career LeBron, started doing. But yeah, just incredibly impressive.
I have to watch all of their games to cover them. All of his shots go in, and it feels that way. And I know it's not accurate, but it just feels like all of his shots go in. And you could say the same about Patty Mills and LaMarcus Aldridge. Those three guys have been so impossibly hot to start the year that it's just nuts.
Yeah, the Mills signing was definitely one of the more impactful signings that weren't talked about a lot. He signed that, what was it, like $6 million a year deal?
Yeah, not even six annual.
But everyone's just kind of like, oh, well, there's another great depth signing for Brooklyn. And I'm sure, I don't know if it was just a case like he wanted to go to a contender, so he was willing to sign below market. But I feel like a lot of other teams would have been happy to up the ante on Mills with that deal. And he's definitely been performing like a guy who deserved more money than that.
He's got 33 threes in his last six games. I mean, he's got to be shooting like 60% on those.
Yeah, I can pull them up, but yeah, he's definitely been
9 of 12, 7 of 10. It's a ridiculous shooting.
Yeah, he's definitely been
Wilson ball.
Yeah, maybe he's one of those guys that, because he plays a lot of international, he's not like totally sink in with the Spalding like some of the guys were, and so he's like, oh, I play with a lot of different balls. He's shooting 50% on the season from three, which is, he's shooting
look
six
out
a
Seth
game. That's utterly ridiculous. Like great shooting stretch for Patty Mills. And Aldridge is the other guy that he obviously had the health concerns and had retired, so him coming back was just this added surprise for Brooklyn. I can't think that was something they were really counting on, but yeah, good for him that he's been able to, he got cleared to return to the game, and he's performing very well in his role for them. You just hope that continues, and that you never want to see a guy have health problems that take him away from a game. Like Chris Bosh was one of the more depressing episodes of NBA fandom, that this guy who was still playing incredibly well and had a lot of good years left had to step away from the game. Aldridge is a guy that, probably later in his career than Bosh was when he had to step away, but he's still showing that he has a lot to give to an NBA team. He's been playing really well. If the Nets ever get even 90% of what James Harden in our minds is, I think they're still, you know, the team to beat, even if Kyrie isn't available to them.
Yeah.
All right, so
and then they've got that chance that they either return Kyrie or trade Kyrie, which could make them much scarier than they've been.
So you cover Brooklyn. Do you think a trade is possible? I would feel like that's just completely off the table right now. Like, who would want Kyrie? I guess a team where the vaccine wouldn't be as much of a concern in a city where that there wasn't the city mandate. Like there is in New York City, but didn't he say he might, he would just retire if he got traded somewhere?
There was that rumor. I think he actually took some steps to dispel that rumor. Like, he tweeted, like, the guy who said it was a puppet. I forget. Was that Chris on Fox? I forget. I don't, I think he wanted, and he did say on his Instagram little speech about the whole thing, don't think I'm going to let them take the game that I love away. Don't think I'm going to retire over this mandate or trade or whatever. So I think he's done more to indicate he wouldn't retire. And I just don't know that it's any one trade is likely, but you never want to say never, because there's always going to be five GMs willing to take a risk and go all in. Hey, we didn't expect to be here. Can you imagine if Kyrie Irving joined this team with who's already fourth in the conference? And then the other way to look at it is then those five teams who just have nothing going for them that might want to make the playoffs. And maybe he gives them a little bit of a hint that he would re-sign their long-term. And they're saying, hey, like, this is our one chance to get a franchise player or a second.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So I had kind of just written that off as a possibility, but maybe that is not as much the case as I believed. I'm sure there's, if that's the case, there'd be any number of teams that would be willing to take the chance given the talent upside and what he could bring to a team on the court.
Like a team like maybe Dallas would at least have some motivation to talk to him about it, you know, behind closed doors. Would you play for us? Okay, because we have some pieces that your team could use that might fit, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess Durant would have to sign off on anything like that, right? Because it seems like he has some say in what happens with Kyrie, given their relationship and everything else.
He would, but you know, they assembled as a brass, as a leadership unit, and he was reportedly part of that. And they came away and decided ultimately, we don't even want you around for practices or road games. So, and then Durant a few days later said, Kyrie and I haven't spoken. So you wonder, you know, James Harden has never won a ring. Steve Nash as a player has never won a ring. Durant would love to win a ring away from Golden State. These guys really, really, really want a championship. And I think that if you read between the lines all season, what they've said, stuff like, hey, we love the sacrifice LaMarcus Aldridge has made for us. It sometimes feels like they're talking to him. So I think they would sign off on a trade maybe they wouldn't be excited to bring back someone like Westbrook, who might be on the table. But some people have talked about that because you'd be getting all the Thunder guys together again.
Just assemble the 2006 Oklahoma City Thunder.
Correct.
That'd be interesting.
Or the Sonics.
Yeah. All right. So interesting food for thought there. Another team that is desperate for a championship is Philadelphia 76ers. Hopefully they get everybody back healthy so we can start talking about that more as a realistic possibility. But for now, 10-9 in the East. Joel Embiid expected to return for Saturday's game. So fingers crossed, he looks like his old self. Until then, we'll talk to everybody next week. Dave, thank you for coming back on the pod. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, and just in time too, because the fans on Twitter were getting a little frustrated with Andre Drummond last game.
Yeah, that can be something we talk about next week. Doc seems a little more willing to go small ball this year than past years, so that's definitely a potential topic of conversation. But
you can, somewhere Ben Simmons is like, oh, now you want it?
Yes. I don't think he's been noticing. I think he's too busy playing Call of Duty, to be honest.
Hey, could be right.
Yeah. So all right, you can find Dave at David Early on Twitter, and of course he has all his great work for us at libertyballers.com. Yeah, check out the site for where all our great writing staff has been putting some good stuff forward. And I'll talk to you next week on Talking About Podcast. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Take care.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.